What is up, cannabis community? Benzinga, how is it going? Thank you all for tuning in. You got Elliot Lane solo shot here today. Javier Haas is on vacation. I saw his Instagram. You should feel free to follow him. He's in the damn mountains somewhere, I think in a pool, but also it looks cold. It was very confusing. But all that said, we'll give him a bunch of crap next week. But thank you for tuning in. We have presented for you today. We have the chief strategy director from Jushi. That's J-U-S-H-F on the OTC. And then right after him, following, we have the CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, A-A-W-H on the OTC. So two amazing companies with you today. Going to hear about their roles within the companies and what they're up to right now. But before we do that, Malia, let's dive in. What are we into today? Welcome to Cannabis Insider. All right. Welcome back, y'all. So we are in the midst of cannabis earnings. It is a busy season. Lots happening. My personal take on it, it's going well so far. We have seen far worse quarters in the cannabis space. So as far as I'm concerned, I will take wins where I can get them. I am optimistic about what's happening in the space. Of course, it's all somewhat inconsequential without federal headlines. But all that said, I think you can look at the earnings of some of these tier ones and tier twos, look at them and be encouraged. There is definite improvement. There's definite operational efficiencies happening. And these companies are starting to run better, for lack of a better term. They are starting to be more efficient. And with that, we can touch on some of those companies. But ones that I'm watching this week, Village Farms, out of the Canadian depths of the licensed producers, has really had a phenomenal week, probably the best of any stock that's performed. VFF on the NASDAQ. Take a look at them. Pretty impressive what they've done on the cannabis side. They're top three market share, I think, in all of their brands, if I'm not mistaken. On the MSO side, Verano started us off with a great, great report. I think industry-leading margins is what I think AGP said about their earnings. We are, of course, a day removed from Ascend Wellness's earnings. Props to John and team over there for growth in their revenue. Pretty positive over there. Really good movement thanks to Maryland coming online, Connecticut giving people a boost. These states coming online are phenomenal headlines if you invest in cannabis stocks. So keep an eye on that throughout the week. We had, I think, four or five more earnings reports this morning. Chicago Atlantic is a phenomenal report yesterday. New League Capital Partners today on the lender side. So if you're looking at ancillary stocks like Weedmaps, lenders like New Lake, like ReFi, if you're looking at plant-touching companies, such as the ones we chatted about earlier, they are all giving you news this week. So dive in, benzinga.com/cannabis for all your news. But today we are focused on our guests. I am super, super excited to just dive into some of these companies, see what their strategies are, see what the perspective of some of these newer executives are in this industry. So without further ado, we're going to start with the one and only chief strategy director from Jushi Holdings, a multi-state operator, OTC listed J-U-S-H-F on the OTC again, Trent Wolovec. Let's bring him on over, Malia. Trent, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, Elliot. How about yourself?
It's good, man. It's a busy week. It's a lot of news coming out. Honestly, I could have dove into a lot of these revenue numbers we're seeing, but I think just a high level overview is fine for investors at this point.
Yeah, I think we've seen the continued growth and fundamentals of U.S. operating entities, and as you pointed out earlier in your comments, new states that are flipping over from mature medical markets into adult use, I think is a story that's going to continue to push revenue, push growth, and most importantly, push EBITDA and operating cash flow. And so these fundamentals of these U.S.-based companies are continuing to distinguish and separate themselves from, the Canadian operators. Jushi is no different. We report tomorrow morning. And so I think I continue to be very optimistic about the growth of the industry, as you alluded to, the tier ones and tier twos of the world. And we'll continue to push on the federal side, I think. Mm-hmm. Everything's going in our direction from that perspective as well. And so whether it's 3 months, 6 months, or 12 months or 24 months, I think we all continue to build strong businesses, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think that's all you can do right now. You can't control what Schumer and McConnell do in the Senate. You can't control what Secretary Becerra does in the HHS. You can lobby. I guess you can put money behind it, but to actually make it happen is a different story. So, you know, that being said, man, your role is Chief Strategy Director, right? And I would imagine a lot of different things affect how you run your day-to-day and the people that are under you, the people that work with you, and what your strategy is. So can you just walk us through a little bit of your day-to-day? You know, what does that entail at Jushi? And what's the strategy like?
Sure. So, you know, the beautiful thing about cannabis, depending on how you look at it, is every day presents a new challenge or a new opportunity to go capture market share or grow in a market or adjust. And so, you know, really, you know, being in the regulated cannabis industry out of Colorado since 2009, you know, kind of been able to see natural progression of how markets have matured, whether that's Colorado or Illinois or pick a state. You know, we kind of have the playbook that's already baked in and understand how consumers and or patients look at and understand cannabis and how they want that to be involved in their day to day, or, you know, on the weekends or on a monthly basis from a wellness perspective, but also you know, just a relief perspective from an adult use standpoint. So, you know, most of my day consists of, you know, developing new products, innovative products, understanding, you know, what and how we can continue to, you know, drive patients and or consumers into our stores. A lot of pricing and strategy goes into that on almost a weekly basis. With the ever-changing kind of state-by-state products and or growth that's happening. Obviously, a lot of people view price compression as a negative for a business. I actually take the complete opposite stance, where price compression is a very good thing for the regulated industry. That just brings in patients and or consumers from the illicit market over into the regulated market, which is a huge thing from a safety perspective, public safety perspective, but also, you know, future growth for the industry. And so spend a lot of time, you know, looking at and understanding the consumer or the patient, as well as, you know, lobbying. You know, most of our focus is around our two core markets, which are in the progress of, you know, hopefully flipping from medical to adult use, which is Pennsylvania and Virginia. We obviously have operations in five other states, but, you know, those are really our two jet engines to fuel growth over the next 12 to 24 months for us. And so a lot of time and effort and thought around that. And then, you know, my bread and butter, how I came up through Jushi, which is business development and understanding and seeing what's out there from an M&A perspective.
You know, does it keep you up at night when the Pennsylvania lawmaker comes out and says, we should just sell weed from liquor stores?
No, to be frank, no, because that's just not possible. Same with New Hampshire. And I find it funny that these folks that come out and make statements don't actually understand the dynamics of the industry. And so there's plenty of stuff that keeps me up at night. those couple of things aren't one of them.
Well, so, good. Yes. I'm glad to hear that. So, you know, it's interesting your comment about price compression. Obviously, it's what's driving a lot of people out of business, to be frank, right? So it's hard to argue with your point, not doing that at all. I think, you know, a little bit of point of clarification, though, is how far down do you go, right? Until it kills your margins. It kills the opportunity for investors. It kills the opportunity for maybe expansion in a healthy manner. I'm curious, you know, because in certain states, it doesn't seem like it's over in that sense.
Yeah, I think, look, business attrition is a good thing. It just happens, period. Mm-hmm. That's the beautiful thing about a free market, if you will. There are people that are going to succeed and there are people that are going to fail. That's just life. And so you have to scale, drive efficiencies, and run a good business to be able to continue to drive margin, at those price points that are needed. I've always said, you know, an eighth should cost between 20 and 40 bucks because that's what a eighth costs on the illicit market. And so I think that's where these markets are going to get to. But the thing is that I think people miss a lot is, we can't take credit cards. I mean, it's just not a normal operating retail environment.
Right.
And so people got to go get cash and people, you know, can't buy on credit and so on and so forth. And so, I mean, I think that's one thing that a lot of people overlook, quite frankly. But then also, you know, we're all landlocked by interstate commerce or lack thereof. Which isn't changing anytime soon, quite frankly. And so you have to scale and drive efficiencies within each manufacturing and cultivation facility in those markets. And so I think the people that are able to do that, you alluded to Verano and GTI, who had, in my opinion, massive blowout quarters to the upside. Mm-hmm. You're seeing people like that continue to execute. That it allows, you know, people to drop price, gain market share away from the illicit market, and they're going to continue to win. Just like Ascend will, just like Jushi will, just like Air will, just like Curaleaf and Trulieve and so on and so forth. And so, I think as you talk about it from an investing perspective, the cannabis market being $100 billion to $150 billion over the next, whatever, 5 to 10 years, we're at $30 billion now, maybe. It comes from taking from the illicit market. And so That's where you got to see pricing get to in order to have people come into the regulated market.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense, man. I have a couple more topics I want to touch on with you. So appreciate your thoughts there. And I'd like to move on to what you said about you said you've been in it since 2009. Is that right?
Correct. I made my first investment with my cousin. She's an owner operator in the state of Colorado since then. And so it's been a fun ride. And then I came into the space full time in 2012.
OG from 2009. That's what we're going to call Trent from now on. All right, man, I appreciate that. So you said, you know, you made a comment about, you know, we have the playbook, right? We understand what consumers want. We understand the trends. And, you know, I'd like to understand how it's grown, you know, or has it, you know, do people still want the same thing? Or, you know, is there more education about further use of cannabis? Has there been more R&D? I'm just really curious about, you know, how that playbook may have adjusted in the past 14 years or if it really is the same.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's always the evolution of cannabis. And, you know, on a daily basis, we're learning about the other types of cannabinoids that the plant has outside of just THC. So, you know, your CBNs, your CBGs, your THCVs, so on and so forth. I also think, you know, us starting to understand, you know, terpenes within the plant is going to be, you know, kind of that next level of consumer and patient education. And so, you know, from that perspective, yes, But we're still in, you know, inning number one, quite frankly, from customers and or patients, you know, understanding that the general population. Now there's, you know, specific pockets, of course, that know and quite frankly understand all that. And so I think that's, you know, super interesting point number one. And we'll get there as, you know, federal normalization happens. But, you know, if you go back and listen to me on podcasts and, you know, 14, 15, 16, I was one of the folks that was like vape and concentrates and drinks and infused products are going to, you know, take over the market in the next.
You and Boris Jordan alike, bud.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Boris and I have diverging opinions on that now. Because I was straight up wrong. You know, flower and pre-rolls, you know, still make up 50 to 60% of the business. You know, back then it was 90-10, but, you know, I thought it was going to flip to 90-10 by now, the other way. And so, yeah, you're seeing, you know, that, that vape and infused products, you know, steady growth, but I wouldn't say it's, you know, going to flip overnight to, you know, 70-30 mix. So I think that's been a really interesting and kind of eye-opening thing for me. And look, Jushi, we produce, you know, kind of three tiers of flower, and we still do our sweet spot, which is vapes and concentrates. You know, we come out of Colorado with The Lab, which is, you know, an extremely well-known, long-standing brand here in Colorado. And so, you know, for us, you know, being able to be vertically integrated and selling through our stores, you got to have the products that move. And so those SKUs that move that make up, you know, 80 to 90% of store sales, you know, are kind of, you know, your classics, you know, eighths, quarters, ounces, pre-rolls, infused pre-rolls, you know, your vapes, your disties, your live resins, live rosins, and then, you know, infused products and concentrates are, you know, way down that list.
So Trent, one last question here for you. I'd like to understand a little bit about Jushi's focus around technology, right? You guys have a pretty, I would say, well-used app. You know, and I think tech is a part of your all strategy. I'd just like to understand a little bit further about how that can grow, how that can help bring new consumers to the forefront, and maybe loyalty you're focused on there. I'd just like to understand a little bit more about how you're pulling in consumers there.
Yeah, look, we're super lucky to have Andreas Newman on our team as our, you know, chief creative director. You know, the man's won 2 Grammys and is like the coolest dude in the world. But you know, he's also a smart, savvy businessman and a marketer. And so being able to drive the business, we're in a unique position as cannabis as a whole. You know, cannabis is coming up in popularity during the digital age. And so people buy stuff online, but that doesn't mean, you know, brick and mortar isn't important. And so, you know, we view brick and mortar as a distribution point, and that distribution point has 5 different channels that run out of that one distribution point, depending on, you know, what state you're in and what regulations you can have. You know, we have over 65%, closer to 70% of all of our orders nationwide come through our e-commerce platform, whether that's, you know, through Jane or Dutchy, depending on the state, and or our app. So that's, you know, a huge, huge advantage for us to get people in and out of our stores because they know, A, what they're grabbing, how much it is. They still have to do the transaction in the store so we can validate their age, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's definitely been something, you know, we've put a lot of investment, time, money, thought, and strategy behind, because, you know, you look at somebody coming into your store from an express perspective, a curbside pickup perspective, a drive-through perspective, and or a delivery perspective. And so all four of those pieces, you know, stem from that technology platform. And so I think that's super important. And then also just from an educational perspective, cannabis is still a very, you know, nascent product to a lot of people across the country. And so being able to do your own research and educate yourself from the comfort of your own home is a big deal versus walking into a store and feel like you're holding people up as you're talking to the retail associate. It is also another big, you know, kind of qualitative bump for us from a technology perspective. So
yeah, very cool.
At a high level, that's kind of how we think about it.
I love it, man. It's all about the consumer at the end of the day and what they're gravitating toward. And it seems like you guys have a good feel of that. We've had Dre on this podcast as well a year plus ago. I'm not sure. Maybe we should get him back on. Truly a great marketing mind. But all that said, Trent, really appreciate you joining us, man. Really interesting strategy and just kind of understanding the consumer is really where the strategy comes from. And I think we have our question answered there. But Trent, pleasure to have you. Chief Strategy Director of Jushi Holdings. That's JUSHF on the OTC. Thanks again, my friend.
Thanks, Elliot. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Very interesting. Heath Koresh, thanks for your comment in the chat here. Often see the price compression coming from the dispensary owners. Find that the dispensary owner controls the price points based on their past experiences with a declining market instead of letting the customer dictate the value on quality and brand integrity. An interesting counterpoint there for sure. And, you know, I think there's definitely a few schools of thought on price compression. Really nice to hear Trent's, though, because I don't think we've had that on the show, though. So thanks again to Trent. So without further ado, though, we're not going to ideate and brainstorm too much longer here because we have an amazing second guest for the day. Double whammy for you. We have the CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, AAWH, on the OTC, John Hartman, here with us today. Let's bring him over. John, welcome in, my friend. How are you?
Doing great, Elliot. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you, man. Honestly, listen, working on my own LinkedIn profile, and I go to connect with you today, and I see some 30,000 followers. I'm like, son of a... I might as well just give up, dude. So you've obviously been in business for a while, bringing your expertise to cannabis. Excited to have you here, man. And, you know, of course, I was stalking to you a little bit for this interview. Really interesting background. From Home Depot, from True Value, from Bed Bath & Beyond, and now cannabis. I'd love to understand a little bit about how those companies kind of led you to Ascend Holdings, if you don't mind going into it for us a little bit.
Yeah, sure, Elliot, happy to. Look, I think if you look at my corporate career, I started in pharmaceutical distribution. So early days learning distribution with a company called Cardinal Health, then went to the retail side with Home Depot and spent a few years on the retail side. And in the middle of my time with them, I was on the M&A team building a company that eventually became Home Depot Supply on the wholesale side of the business. So then down to the bottom of the earth in New Zealand to run a retailer down there for several years, which was an amazing experience. And then back to Chicago to run True Value. And look, I think if you look at the common threads that run through this, you're talking about wholesale, retail, in a little bit of manufacturing. So looking at the opportunity at Ascend earlier this year, it, you know, to me at this juncture in my career, it's about, you know, what's the opportunity for me to apply the experiences that I've had to a company that has needs in those areas. And you think about Ascend and the broader vertically integrated cannabis business, you've got wholesale, retail, and manufacturing. So for me, it's a perfect match and thrilled to be part of the team.
Interesting, though, because you see a lot of people bring in finance executives, right? Investment bankers. You see, and I think if I looked at your background correctly, you have a law degree, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. So
great regulatory experience as well. But you often see a lot of companies now focus on the CPG side, on the branding side, on the consumer side. And wholesale is a massive part of the industry. It's interesting. You saw a lot more focus on it in Q2 reports than I've seen over the past several quarters. That said, you know, how does Ascend look at? I mean, you're newer, so you're a couple months in. So, you know, I'm sure you're still developing, you know, your own direction for the company. It's still kind of coming under play for you. So maybe a overall umbrella perspective of where you see that going for Ascend.
No, look, I think we have, we have great cannabis and CBD, cannabis and CPG experience in our company, on our team. And so I think, you know, the nice complementary add of someone that has deep wholesale and retail experiences, you know, I think why I ended up as the right person for the job. And I think the balance of those experiences, and as we said in our earnings on Tuesday, we just added a terrific retail ops leader to our team to really take our retail ops performance to the next level. I think you're going to see a really nice blend of existing team members with a few of us who are newer to the company and newer to cannabis, bringing in a diverse set of experiences to help drive the next level of growth for the company.
Yeah. And, you know, to kind of expand upon that from my own personal experience, we had Abner on multiple times in the past, and I've just always been in awe at how much money you all drive from a much lesser amount of retail driven assets than your competitors. And the value of each of your dispensaries is much higher than most of your peers. And that in particular has been one of my favorite parts of Ascend. So the fact that you're revamping the strategy, what is there to get better there? I'm just curious, like, where do you see the need to, obviously there's always room to get better. I'm not saying there's not. I'm just saying, what's next for something that's had success?
Before I answer your question, let me use your question as a great jump off point, because
please,
what I've really enjoyed doing as part of my own learning and educational journey over the last 3 months with the company. By the way, I talked on the earnings call about my first 8 weeks, basically on the road every day, every dispensary, every cultivation and production facility, all of our corporate teams. And I think, you know, that grounded me. But my message coming off of that journey, that educational journey, is this, and it ties in exactly to your comments about Abner, the comments about what Ascend has achieved so far. And that is, there's a lot to be proud of. And I think the reason that you're seeing terrific results come out of this specific, very specifically curated set of assets that the company has is because the company has been very diligent about the investments they've made in each of these markets. So, you know, we are vertically integrated in 6 of our 7 markets so far, have a great wholesale and retail presence in most of those markets. And I think that where do we go from here? So, you know, I want to pause and give credit where credit's due, which is in 4.5 years, this company went from a dead stop to a run rate, $500 million revenue, profitable revenue business. And I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to make sure the team is aware of how great that is. And I've been reminding them of that. And now the question is, like, how do we build on that? What's phase two look like? And where do we go from here? Look, and I think that I have very specific ideas that as I've listened and learned on this journey around Ascend, I have very specific ideas around how we can improve both our top line growth, our margins, and our overall profitability and cash flow. And that's what you're going to hear us talking about in the coming quarters. I'll throw a few general examples out there, but I promise more details to come in the future. From a cultivation and production perspective, we've got 6 great facilities in 6 of our 7 states, and they're doing a terrific job. There's an opportunity for us to improve the efficiencies in those facilities. From a retail perspective, something that I'm, you know, that's really near and dear to my heart and near and dear to our brand new retail leader's heart as well, Rick Wilkins, who just joined our team on Monday. You know, from a product and customer perspective, there are opportunities for us to build on where we are today and add additional new products and related services to better meet the needs of our customers and our patients, both on the rec and on the medical side. And from a, you know, from a wholesale perspective, while we're achieving great market penetration with in states like Illinois and states like New Jersey, you know, areas where we're having record sales, not only on the retail side, but on the wholesale side of the business, I think there's an opportunity for us to continue to differentiate ourselves with those wholesale customers, with the products that we sell them.
Yeah, phenomenal, man. So, you know, were you able to jump into the new states? You know, looking at Maryland coming online, you know, a month after you joined the company, obviously a lot happening there. How do you look at new opportunities like that? Because the states don't wait, unfortunately, for you to get used to the seat that you're in now. So I'm just curious, what was that first month like getting prepared for a new state and a new strategy there?
It's a great question, Elliot. It was actually on my 7-8 weeks journey around the network. Maryland was my last stop. And it was the week, you know, leading up to the Saturday, July 1st of the flip to recreational. So the team was heavily burdened by like the new guy showing up, and they're trying to finalize these four great dispensaries to flip from medical to rec on Saturday. Look, they did a terrific job, but I think the broader picture says a lot about how Ascend's been thinking about new markets and will continue to think like this. So, Abner, Dan, and the team, they acquired some distressed assets in Maryland, right on the cusp of the go live for adult use, integrated that business, prepared those dispensaries, remodeled them, you know, made some sensible and reasonable investments into those buildings, and then, you know, boom, ready to take advantage of the flip. And I think that's what you'll see us continue to do, is focus on the markets we're in, and where we have opportunistic M&A plays that are highly accretive to, you know, to our network and financially, you know, that's where you'll see us continue to expand. But deepening and intensifying the ability to leverage the assets we have in the vertical markets we're already in, and then where it makes sense, focus on these late stage med markets, you know, early stage rec markets, where we'll make some very targeted additional investments.
So I want to ask you specifically about, it's more of a comparison, not asking about your experience at the company, but obviously BBBY, Bed Bath & Beyond, made some headlines over the last year. You know, I'm curious, a lot of people think the cannabis industry is dead, it's dying, it's terrible, there's no path back, there's no hope. And those are people that generally just don't, you know, follow. They maybe were burned on a stock or something at some point. But when it comes to Bed Bath & Beyond, obviously they going through a tough time. We'll say
done.
That.
I mean, they're
done. Just putting it lightly. Yeah. But that is, how is that different than what you're seeing in cannabis with some of these companies? Or is it, do you see similarities, like, you know, that companies need to avoid, just from your experience having gone through something of that nature? Is there any like flags that you're seeing throughout the industry that like people should really be careful around this?
Yeah, let me draw a pretty distinct line between the two. First, let me clarify that, you know, I took a job at Bed Bath in early 2020, and I was running the Bye Bye Baby division. And I think the turnaround of that division and having a record year in 2021 before the significant issues that impacted Bed Bath, you know, ended up bringing the Bye Bye Baby business down with it, are really well, you know, anyone that's curious can read the Wall Street Journal or Forbes or whatever. There's plenty written around the two or three key things that went wrong in the Bed Bath side of the business. And it's really tragic. The series of decisions that were made that basically ended that company and took Baby down with it. Are there parallels between Bed Bath and the cannabis industry? Look, I think, again, read up on it. I'll have very little to say about what happened there. I think cannabis, the best days are ahead for cannabis. Will there be, will there be some players that fall out on this journey? You know, I think that if there is a comparison to be drawn, it's a loose one, but I think it's about decision making. It's about decision-making timelines of what impacts companies. And, you know, there were a very clear set of decisions that were made at Bed Bath that negatively impacted that relationship with the first with the customer and then overall from an investment perspective in the business. In cannabis, you know, unfortunately, the regulatory decisions that have been made, particularly on a national level, are impeding the inflow of capital into our industry. And I think that as your prior guest spelled out, whether it's, you know, in 2 months, 6 months, 12 months, or a little bit further down the road, some relief in one of these particular areas of federal regulation will see a, you know, in my humble opinion, an influx of investment capability in the industry. In the meantime, there is a shakeout as there, you know, it's not necessarily unique to cannabis in any rapidly grow. If you look back historically in any rapidly growing commercial endeavor, there's going to be companies that shake out. I mean, I could draw a distinct parallel to an industry that I have a lot of familiarity with. It's the hardware and home improvement industry. So when Home Depot, Lowe's, and regionally in the Midwest, Menards started to roll out basically 4,000+ big boxes across the United States, the original gangster format of that business, the OG, was individual mom and pop's hardware stores. And there's about half as many individually owned hardware stores in the US today as there were 25 or 30 years ago. So look, I think the parallel is industries are going to evolve. We're in a highly regulated yet still growing and evolving industry. And sadly, some players won't make it. For those of us that are strongly performing, are connected to our customer, are providing great products and services, and minding our financial responsibilities, I think those will be the organizations that are the winners in the end.
Well said, man. I worded that question terribly, but you gave a phenomenal answer. So a couple more questions for me. You know, one being, you've been in BD, you've done a lot of operations work, you've been a president, you've been a director, you come now into the role of CEO of a cannabis company. And I'm not sure how much was on your plate previously in other companies, but the role of just connecting with investors, you know, understanding what they're looking at, how are you communicating with them the opportunity, and or what maybe fresh perspective can you bring to the communication with investors as you move forward as CEO?
Yeah, it's a very timely question, Elliot, because we just came off earnings and with my colleague, Dan Neville, our CFO, and for several of the calls immediately following our earnings on Tuesday, we, you know, connected directly with a number of the analysts yesterday and today, continuing with conversations with our investors. So look, I think it's personal connection. It's, you know, obviously still a bunch by video, but it is getting to know them, introductions, sharing early thoughts and ideas about the business, you know, giving them the reassurance that the company's in a great and stable and growing position, and then talking about what the future brings. And I think that's, you know, the early message for me is not dissimilar than the one that I shared with you. The company, you know, my own diligence on the company before I became an employee and a director of the company has been only deeply reaffirmed by my first 90 days in the job. You know, what I studied as an outsider has been completely reaffirmed as an insider, and that is these are great assets in really great markets, and the company's taken a thoughtful approach to capital allocation. And now with our results, not despite a tough first quarter from a production perspective, but to drive 28% revenue growth year over year, 45% wholesale growth year over year, solid EBITDA, second quarter in a row of positive cash flow with a signal that people should expect that'll continue. Third quarter in a row of a million or more transactions in our retail outlets, in our retail stores, including our outlets. A lot of positives to build on. And as I said to our board, and I've said to the analysts and our investors, I'm pausing to make sure that everyone recognizes the great work that's been done before. But the board didn't hire me for what's been. They've hired me for what's going to come. And that's, you know, so more to come there.
Fair enough, man. I've been calling it EBITDA. I said EBITDA. Are people making fun of me?
Ebb sounds like ebb and flow. I don't like that as much.
Listen,
as
well. I'll take either one. We know what you're talking about. I like it. Honestly, I always take a fresh perspective on finance, man. All right. So one more question for you. When it comes to the political nature of this industry, how involved is Ascend, and how involved do you plan on Ascend being in the lobbying discussion, in the Capitol Hill discussion, or are you just going to build your business and go super extreme of just kind of weathering the storm until something happens somewhere in the middle? I'm just curious where you are in that spectrum.
No, look, first, Elliot, I would say that as I've learned the business, one of the things that's been very reassuring and rewarding for me to see is that Ascend has developed and maintained terrific relationships in each of the states that we are doing business in. So there's a solid open channel of communications with the regulators in each of the states that that we're doing business with, compliance with those regulations. Obviously, it's not just a necessity, but something we take very seriously as an organization. And I'm reassured by that. On the national level, you've heard our chairman speak regularly about our company's commitment to on a number of fronts as it relates to the federal regulation, whether it's speaking to building the right relationships with politicians or speaking with their teams around around some of the necessary changes that we're all hopeful for: reclassification of cannabis, the Safe Banking Act, the list goes on and on. We have also partnered with, and with Abner's leadership, we partnered with other cannabis leaders to think about ways that we can, use all three branches of the government, not just the executive and the legislative, but also the judicial branch to, advance decisions that will be beneficial for us as a whole in the industry. So I think you'll see a continued balance of focus on the things that we can control day to day, how we drive the business, how we grow the top line, how we make the business more profitable and valuable for our investors, but also how we work individually and collectively with the industry to drive necessary reform in the federal legislation.
Awesome. John, it's been a pleasure, man. It's really nice to meet you. Nice to get a sense of your vision, where you're taking a phenomenal company already and how you're going to make it better. But you bring great expertise. I'm excited to see where this goes. And I look forward to hopefully being able to cover Ascend and keep you in our ecosystem, because I know our investors and audience would love to hear from you more. So, John, stay in touch. Anything else that you'd like to leave our audience with?
No, Elliot, thank you for the chance. I think you nailed it there at the end. Ascend's in a great position, and we're excited about what the future holds.
Awesome. Thank you, John. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks again.
All right, y'all. Two phenomenal C-suites from the cannabis industry today. Hope you enjoyed the content. Hope you enjoyed their insights. They're both way better dressed than I am, but I'm on the back end of COVID, so I'm going to take that excuse all day and wear a t-shirt. But enjoyed having both of them. Really appreciate them joining us. Until next week, Tuesday and Thursday at 1 Eastern time, every day at 8:30, you get a 5-minute update on stocks and legislative headlines, and then benzinga.com/cannabis all day, every day. Last but not least, get your tickets to Chicago. Every single major operator is going to be there. I believe both of these guys will as well, but you're going to have Canopy, Curaleaf, Truly, Verano, Governor J.B. Pritzker from Illinois, Governor Brian from U.S. Virgin Islands, Ed Perlmutter, Cory Gardner. It's going to be a phenomenal agenda. End of September, bzcannabis.com. Be there or be square. Until next week, y'all, have a good one. Peace.